Hey everybody, this is Chris Daly. I want to welcome you to Writing with the Window Down. This is a podcast I've been doing now for 17 years, something like this, but not very frequent. So it's when I feel like it, I put something out. And I thought this would be a good opportunity to share with you a meeting that a friend of mine, Cody Marks Bailey, held today. Talking about crypto, and specifically talking about getting crypto out of the exchange and into your own wallet for safety reasons. Again, this is Cody Marks Bailey, and I think we're going to get to be able to do some regular meetings to talk about different aspects of crypto. Great stuff.
The idea here was, I think we've all kind of watched what's been going on in Canada, and that's kind of what spurred a lot of this, a lot of the reasoning for me to want to do this. You know, the Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau, you know, said that he was going to freeze these bank accounts and take money and prevent people from conducting a commerce or supporting a cause. Now, regardless of what you feel about, you know, what the truckers are doing up in Canada, regardless of whether or not you support them or not, you know, I think there's one of those, we're in the situation where we all need to realize that, you know, we need to be able to protest peacefully. We need to be able to support causes we want, and where the government doesn't get to choose, you know, pick who's can support who we can't. And so that's, I think, what most people here have been seeing over the last week. I went up to DC last week to do a podcast on the subject about how crypto can basically solve these problems, where the government can't ban. I mean, they can try, they can make it illegal, but they can't stop it. And so I think what we saw over the last week was when the Canadian government sort of heavy-handedly came down on this peaceful protest in Ottawa, there was a bit of a Barbra Streisand effect, which is where when you call attention to something, it kind of blows up in your face and people do it more. It's kind of the opposite of what you wanted it to do. And so by them doing that, they just basically, like, people from all over the world were like, oh, really? So if I send this, what are you going to do? And so it kind of blew up in their face in some ways. Here we go. Got some late stragglers coming in, but I think we're good. All right. So let's get back into where we're at here. So right now you've got centralized services like Coinbase, KuCoin, Robinhood. There's, you know, several dozen of these that U.S. and kind of North American citizens have access to. Coinbase is probably the largest and most well-known. I use Coinbase. I use them to go on and off, like, to what's called on-wrapping and off-wrapping. And that's where you can take crypto and make it into actual U.S. dollars that you can then, you know, bank wire to your bank so you can spend. KuCoin is a centralized exchange. They are, I think, in Singapore, but they have a lot of really great coins that I've been, you know, looking at lately, and it's kind of an easy way to get in and out. They don't. I don't know if KuCoin does on-ramping and off-ramping, meaning going from crypto to fiat or fiat into crypto. I basically had to go through Coinbase. KuCoin might allow for that, but remember, all have those six letters in there, AML, KYC, and that's where they do your anti-money laundering and know your customer. And they do this from a regulatory standpoint because they kind of need to. They want to make sure that you're not, you know, some foreign actor that's, you know, on some sort of OFAC list or something like that. And so these systems work really well. They're a great, you know, a first place to go when I've got a friend or someone I know asks me, like, hey, you're into crypto, like, what should I do? I usually push them towards using one of these services because they're, you know, they're established, they're safe, they're easy to use, they probably have the best user interface. Most normie, you know, people coming in from the normal world, these are really great acts, you know, ways to get in. Robinhood, we all know, because they've been doing the sort of you know, stock stuff, and then they branched into crypto. But the problem with this is, when you want to send Bitcoin to somebody, you need to be able to hold that crypto yourself. You need to custody that. It needs to be your crypto, not crypto that Coinbase owns or holds for you, because then Coinbase can dictate what you can do with it. Kind of like having cash in your hand versus going through your bank. there's a lot of reasons. And as you can see here, all that has to happen is, you know, Canada, the Canadian government, all they have to do is basically lean on Coinbase and say, hey, if you want to do business in our country, you need to ban people from sending money to these different addresses. And so that's kind of what we saw recently about how the system doesn't really work. And so by self-custodying means that you have control over your crypto. You you're the only one that has access to the private keys, which is what you use to authorize the transfer of coins on these different blockchains. So we'll get into the next piece. There are several what are called hot storage. There's hot and cold, and I'll explain the difference to those. So these are applications that you would install on your laptop or maybe in your browser or on your phone. I'm not a big fan of doing lots of crypto on my phone. It's a small device. It's, you know, it is secure to some degree, but, you know, you shouldn't be moving, you know, $25,000, you know, over on your iPhone, because it's convenient. That kind of needs to be done in a maybe on your laptop or something that's a little more secure, not just something you're going to be, you know, throwing around on a daily basis. And so here there are it gave some examples. Terra Station, which is what I use on a daily basis. And that's for handling Luna and the Terra ecosystem. I think a lot of people on this call kind of got into Luna about a year ago, and that was a really good move. Over on Android and iOS, you've got Jack's Wallet. There's a bunch of them out there, and if you kind of go through the Apple Store or the Google Store, you'll be able to kind of be steered towards the good ones. Jack's Wallet is one I've used in the past. But there's a bunch out there. Don't, you know, be careful with the stuff. If it looks, you know, shady, don't do it. If it has like 4 reviews, don't use it. You know, use something that's got 5 stars and has been out there for quite a while. And then just kind of read, maybe go to the website and read what it supports. So a wallet like Jack's Wallet that I've got here in the top right, Jack's Wallet will service many different cryptos, like maybe, I don't know, 75 to 100. I haven't checked, but they'll support all the big ones. You know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cardano, Atom, those types of blockchains and currencies. And then you have what are called browser-based wallets, which are the wallets you use in your browser. And this allows you to interact with DApps, decentralized applications. So all the whole DeFi or decentralized finance and applications that are being built on blockchain allows you to sort of interact with them on the website directly. And so there's a combination here of all these that you might want to use here and there. And it really depends on what you're trying to do. So these applications right here are really great for using your crypto. So buying things, transferring to a friend, interacting with a dApp, or staking, or using any of the decentralized infrastructure that's being built, especially through the browser, which is kind of the portal to getting to all those different applications. In one case, if you use Terra Station browser extension, that allows you to get to access things like Anchor, which gives you 20% savings account with UST, which is the US dollar stablecoin on Terra. I know I'm speaking fast here, but there's a lot to cover. But if you wanted to move UST, the stablecoin, that's pegged to the dollar, and get 20%, that's pretty good. I mean, that's a pretty, there's some technical risk, but the system has, I think, $8 or $9 trillion or $1 billion in there. So there's a lot of people that are trusting that, and it looks pretty safe. 20% on dollars is better than any bank will ever give you. So I would definitely take a look at that. And maybe we can do another one of these another time, where I can show you exactly how that works and like walk you through that. However, here we go. This is the cold storage. This is where you want to keep most of your crypto, the stuff that's dormant, the stuff you're not slinging around or transferring or putting to work. This is stuff you kind of put off to the side. This is like, think of this as your savings account, whereas your hot storage might be your checking account, right? So you have two different pieces. I'm actually a huge fan of ink on paper, and that means you literally write down the seed phrase that your wallet gives you. So when you create a new wallet, and we'll go through that in just a second, it gives you this like list of anywhere from 16 to 20 to 24, sometimes more, words. And they come from a word bank that allows you to basically instead of writing down, you know, a bunch of ones and zeros, which is what everything is on a computer, or even a large, you know, a large string, this is much easier. As you can see in this picture, you know, you have words like alone, submit, grief, shield, glare. It's easy to see, it's easy to handle, and it's got a lower chance of you screwing something up because you didn't write down, you know, you thought a T looked like an F and you didn't write the right thing down. On the left, we've got the hardware wallets, and we'll get to that in just a second. Hardware devices are great. They're very secure. They are sometimes easier to use than ink on paper. I just prefer ink on paper because I know I can hide a piece of paper someplace very, very clever or put that in a safe deposit box or whatever. And I know that as long as no one sees that piece of paper, my crypto is going to be safe. And those words, we'll get to in a second, where they come from and how they're created. So all in all, cold storage is high security, good for large amounts. It has cumbersome access, but kind of by design. You don't want it to be easy. This makes it very difficult for hackers they would have to physically break into your home and take your hardware wallet, like the device on the left, or find this piece of paper that you have hidden in a cooking book on the shelf, you know, in the kitchen where no one is ever going to look. You can get really creative with that too, where you store your ink on paper. Let's move on. Hardware wallets, like I was just talking about, there's really two leaders in the space. There's Ledger, which is what I use, and then there's Trezor on the bottom. Both of those are pretty much, you know, pretty well trusted in the ecosystem. It comes with software that you install on your Mac or PC or whatever, and then you connect it with a USB cable, and it allows you to sort of transact, send crypto, sign messages, that kind of stuff. And here on the left-hand side, I on the very last piece there, I put maybe choose based on availability. I wouldn't suggest one or the other. If I had bought Trezor first, I would be using that. Or if I happen to buy Ledger, so that's what I use. But really, I can't advocate one over the other. So let's talk about when you're setting up a new wallet. So on the left here, we have this is Terra Station in the browser. So it's a little window that pops up. You're probably familiar with MetaMask, very similar to that. You'll put in a wallet name. That's just a name you want to call it because it's pretty easy for you to remember. So it might be like, you know, my everyday wallet, or maybe my name, or like my default wallet, or whatever you want to call it. The wallet name really is just for you. It's a helper for you to know what, you know, what that is, because you might have multiple wallets. Where it has password, that right there is just the password you use on your machine to access this crypto, because it's basically being held on the machine and you need to encrypt that. That way your buddy just can't sit down at the computer and use your crypto. There's one layer of protection there. And then you have the seed phrase, which is blanked out here for obviously good reason. And that is 24 words that you're going to basically write down on a piece of paper. And you can kind of see how the person did it over here on the right-hand side. And so you would just copy that over here. And then most wallets will ask you to confirm or to make sure you wrote it down correctly. And it'll ask you for two or three, four random words in your passphrase to make sure that you actually wrote it down. Because a lot of people go, oh, I'm just going to, you know, I'll write it down, or I'll take a screenshot, or I'll take a photo with my phone, or I'll email myself the seed phrase. Okay, do not do any of those. The moment you take a photo, it gets uploaded to iCloud, and now Apple has access to your keys, right? If you send an email, now Google has access to your Gmail account, and they can see your keys. So don't, like, you have to really think about where you're doing this. If you're doing this at a coffee shop, think about the camera that might be over your shoulder, right? You really have to step into this world of high security and really think about what you're doing. Don't do this when you're drunk. Don't do this when you're high. Don't do this when you're, you know, in between things or you're in a rush. Sit down. You read all of the text on the screen and just make sure you do exactly what's being, you know, told in the instructions. You might want to double, triple, you know, verify this stuff. If you've got a trusted friend or a spouse that could sit down and help you with this, that's a good way to do it. You just want to be very, very, very careful with this, because there is no way to reset. So if you lose that piece of paper or the treasure, you're pretty screwed. Like, it's gone. There is no help. There's no support line. There's no help. There's no no way to get that stuff back. And, you know, you could lose a lot of money. So you're, you know, great trust, great, you know, great responsibility. And it's sort of all on you. Let's do questions, because I'm sure I skipped over a bunch of stuff. But I'd be glad to help you with this. One thing I didn't cover, or I didn't specifically mention, was when you go onto Coinbase, and let's say you have, you know, one Bitcoin, good for you. You have that one Bitcoin and you want to transfer it. You're going to basically, I think it's withdraw. I think it's what they, it's their, or maybe send. You're going to send your crypto to your self-custodied wallet, you know, your public address that you'll get from your Trezor or from your wallet, you know, whatever you use in the system. And you would just send it there and maybe send a small amount first, like to make sure that it works. And then maybe see if you can send it back round trip, maybe send $10 worth just to make sure you know what you're doing. And then once you get the hang of it, you start, you know, you can do this a lot faster and you feel a lot more comfortable with the process. So let's open it up for questions. I know I covered a lot and I went pretty fast, but I don't have much time today and I want to get to everybody. So
I have a quick question. When you send it from Coinbase to your new self-custody wallet, is that considered a sale and is it taxable or is it just a shift in location?
Yeah, no, I don't think that's a sale as far as the IRS is concerned, because you haven't realized any gains. So maybe a good example would be like taking your portfolio from Fidelity and moving it over to Charles Schwab. You know, there's not a, you're not realizing any gains. You're just moving. So as long as you don't move out, like you sell your, you know, let's say you consolidate. Let's say you own 10 different currencies on Coinbase. Instead of sending 10 different transactions out, you might want to just consolidate down to Bitcoin and move that over. Then yes, you would have a sale, you know, something in that. I'm not a tax attorney by any means, so you might want to check on that. But I don't. It wouldn't make sense that that would be considered a sale. Anybody else? Come on, guys. I know y'all have questions.
I have a question about stacking Bitcoin.
With stacking?
Yeah, I've been buying bits and pieces of Bitcoin here and there over the last couple of years. So when I transfer it to another wallet, is it going to be transferring different keys, multiple keys per stack of Bitcoin, or can I do it all at once?
Have you been buying them on Coinbase?
Yes.
Or I'm sorry, let me on a centralized exchange. I shouldn't ask detailed information. If your balance on Coinbase or whatever you're using will say you have, you know, 7.29 Bitcoin or whatever the hell you have, and that's all kept sort of in the background. They have their own accounting system where they store those coins, and they may not be all in one wallet. They might be across five or six. But because these are all fungible. It's kind of like when you go to the bank and you deposit a 5, a 10, and a 1. They just credit your account with 16. They don't say you have a 10, a 5, and a 1 that we owe you. To answer your question, when you send it out, it'll be in one giant transaction. So you'll have all your Bitcoin sent over in one big amount, not chopped up into little bitty pieces the way you bought it.
Okay, great. Thanks.
I have another question. I apologize to all you knowledgeable people. I really know nothing. I just buy and hold. So the Ledger and the Terrazzo or whatever it was, Trezor, those are not centrally managed systems. We're basically taking our money out of the bank and putting it under the mattress and hoping nobody goes and looks there.
In a lot of ways, yeah. It's a transfer of wealth from one system to another. You know, the governments have shown, I mean, this is where I get all political and start a rebellion here, but, you know, the governments have shown that they're irresponsible with money supply. We're looking at an effective 15% inflation, and there's nothing really that the U.S. population can do about that. I mean, we can try to vote the other guy in, but, you know, that just doesn't seem to work. They just keep printing up more of it. So this gets into, like, the Austrian school of economics, where sound money, you know, supply, you know, things like obviously gold is great, but you can't really spend it. Like you can't go to a grocery store and shave off gold off your bar. So really it's having this new crypto system allows us to have the best of both worlds, the security, the guarantee that, you know, there's no special counsel in Washington or in New York that gets to decide, you know, how much my money is worth. I think this is a completely new world. Now we see that Bitcoin and, you know, every crypto out there is extremely volatile. That will change over time. And if you zoom out on the map, you're seeing the value go up, you know, over time. Of course, you know, we're down a bunch from 2 months ago, but kind of take some perspective. And once this becomes a $10 trillion, $20 trillion, $30 trillion market, it's going to be harder to move the sale price for Bitcoin. And if you stop thinking about what is it in relation to the dollar, it kind of changes, you know, the way you look at things. I mean, I think everybody on this call is still, you know, dollar denominated or dollar based. Everything has, everything's based in dollars. So it's, it takes a while for you to kind of come off of that. But, you know, think about the people in Venezuela, like when the Bolivar started to fall, there's a point where you just like stop tracking it and you move to something else. So long story there. Anybody else? I can field like just random crypto questions. We've got like 20 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, I've got some random unrelated stuff. I'm curious if there's any other protocols, projects, and things like that that you've had your eye on. I was kind of looking at higher yield things last year, the DAOs, all those kind of forks. They, you know, those were kind of short-term things that lasted, you know, some matter of a few months. Mm-hmm. Anchor's still on my radar. That's a great yield. Kind of looking for some higher yield stuff that might be somewhat sustainable. Looking at the DGEN box on Abracadabra Money. Let's see. Whitewell, Terra.
You're asking I don't give investment advice. I'll just tell you about some technologies that I think are really interesting and cool to look at. Okay. You got to be really careful about giving investment advice. So I usually just talk about technology and let you guys, know what I'm looking at. There's a few out there. There's the Cosmos ecosystem, which y'all kind of saw me talk about over the last year on Facebook and other places. Mm-hmm. The Cosmos ecosystem is sort of the internet of blockchains. Let me explain what that means. With Ethereum, you have very high gas prices, which is what you have to pay to conduct commerce on the chain, be it sending a currency to somebody else or interacting with a smart contract. And the infrastructure around Ethereum isn't really conducive for the type of growth that we need. So there's another project that started about 7 years ago, 6 years ago, called Tendermint that ended up, they ended up making a new blockchain called Cosmos. And this is the hub and spoke model that the Cosmos ecosystem employs. Terra, which I think most of you on here know about Terra and Luna and how well it's done this year, that is in the Cosmos ecosystem. What's cool is all these different chains can now connect to each other and they can send value from one to the other. And if you go to Map of Zones, actually here, I'll pull that up.
Okay.
This is a whole lot easier to show when I have a... So this is Map of Zones. And if you zoom in, you'll see all the different chains that are in the ecosystem. So there's Terra. Mm-hmm. You've got Osmosis, which is a really great piece of technology out there. Juno. You've got a bunch of smaller chains that are out there. Comdex, which does commodities markets. You've got a meme coin for Chihuahua. We've got our own doggy coin. That's always important. But you can see how all these different chains are now connected to each other, right? So now we have a lot more scalability because we have more infrastructure and more places to conduct commerce. Secret is a really great chain. It provides privacy for people who are conducting transactions or interacting with smart contracts. So, you know, in the interest of privacy, I think Secret is a great place to look. Osmosis is a really great decentralized exchange, so it allows you to convert from one currency to another, be it Bitcoin to Ethereum or Luna to, you know, Secret or any of these different pieces. That's what's called a DEX, a decentralized exchange. And DEX cannot be targeted by governments or taken down. There's very, very, very rarely any sort of AML KYC. This is truly where the Wild West is in crypto right now. So you can see the amount of transfers going on per day between the different chains down here. You can see kind of their activity and stuff. Osmosis being the exchange, you can see that it has really a whole lot of connections to other chains because they all depend on it for providing liquidity in those spaces.
I've got more of a meta question for Cody. You were getting to the good part is when I had to go to my appointment, and I just, like, I was listening while, like, kind of one ear in, one ear out. I would love to, and happy to pay for to do a version that records everything. That way you can also have an FAQ that if people ask you questions asynchronously, you can just point to the recorded video that has all these questions, because the presentation looks amazing, what I caught of it, and I think it'd be really valuable. And then instead of doing one-on-ones, you can say, look, watch this video first. If the question has been answered, then I'll answer it. Just have an FAQ video with all of the highlights and, like, notes from every single thing with links and whatnot. I'm happy to do the production end of it just so, because I could see how valuable it would be. And we'll sideline this, but I just want to say you're a wealth of great information, and I'm really grateful that you're doing this for us. I know that you get nothing out of it, but we know there's so much scammy shit out there. To be able to have reliable, good information is amazing, and we're very, very grateful for you, Jacoby.
I appreciate those words, Kai. We can do that. I don't mind doing these things. What I really don't like doing is, like, the one-to-one type stuff, because it's right. Exhausting, and, like, which is why, you know, we've got about 20-something people here, which is great. And I'll do one-to-many of these kind of things whenever y'all want. If you want to, I can, maybe not every week, but maybe every other week, Wednesdays at 2 p.m., the same time we're doing now. We can do that. I might start a little friends group for crypto, and we can do these things. I really enjoy, you know, I really enjoy explaining this stuff to people and demystifying it, because, like, I have a hard time hanging on sometimes, and I'm extremely technical. You know, I've been programming for 30 years, and I'm thinking, you know, like, you know, I've got lots of friends out there that you know, believe in the technology. They believe in the ethos and, like, where things are going, and they sit down at the computer and it's like, okay, you've got, you know, 50% is scammers out there, and the other 50% is, like, highly technical stuff that people may not have an easy time understanding. So it's like that's a rock and a hard place for a lot of people. And I, you know, enjoy doing this. I think, you know, all you guys kind of trust me on stuff, and I can explain these things and walk people through it. Why don't we do that? Why don't we, Kai, contact us, and we'll put together a little fact. I've got the slides. I can put those out there. I might just run it through my website. I've got, I can probably put them on there and just start capturing stuff there. So Cass just asked if there was a way for government to lean on Ledger or Trezor to prevent the program from working. They can't, because if you own, like, that Trezor or that Ledger Nano, that those pieces of hardware that I showed, aren't connected to the internet. So there's no way for them to sort of phone in and say, hey, disable that. You're pretty much at that point, you're sovereign, you're in the clear. Now what governments can try to do is go after Ledger and Trezor and go after them and in the future and say, hey, you need to give us a copy of all the keys that's being generated on the device. But if that ever happened, word would get out and people would know. There's a lot of watchmen watching over the other watchmen. So in this place, it's trust no one. So if that ever happens, you've got a massive community out there that would tell you what's going on. But that's kind of the nice thing, is you want to have hardware that you own, that you maintain. It's your responsibility, not, you know, trusting someone like a Facebook or a Google or a Coinbase or any of these centralized services to do, you know, it's great for a while. I mean, I keep spending money on Coinbase. I've got a Coinbase Coinbase card. These are actually really handy. Like you can get a, I'm not going to show you the back, but like they have this little Coinbase Visa. It's a debit card. It's not a credit card. And what this allows you to do is basically just, you can spend your Bitcoin or your whatever you put in there. There's like, I don't know, 30 or so coins they probably support. And it'll basically sell them immediately whenever you, let's see here. Okay. So Chris just asked about, a bulletproof plugin for accepting crypto as payment on a WordPress site. I would not do crypto with WordPress. It's not that WordPress is handling private keys. It's that someone could hack WordPress very easily and change the address that people are sending to. So I would figure out a way to obfuscate that, like maybe use one of the services that allows for people to send to an email address or to some. Chris, get with me on that. I'll help you through that. Taylor, meeting. So the risks of holding assets on Coinbase. There's not many right now, but in the future, if governments get cranky, they start leaning on those guys and start seizing assets, or they start telling you what you can and cannot do with them, or they put like, yeah, you can withdraw it, but only $2,000 a day, you know, so you, to prevent a bank run or to prevent, people from moving, you know, mass amounts out. It's the same story as like why most of us in this call probably don't like our banks. I mean, there's some banks that are better than others, but, how many times have you had, you know, a PayPal, account frozen because they said, oh, we don't know who sent that in. It's like, it's none of your business. It's a buddy of mine. We're renting an Airbnb and he sent me $400. Why are you getting in my business? That's the kind of stuff we're really trying to solve with crypto, writ large. Yeah, and I think the Canadian truckers thing was like where it really, like, they really overstepped their bounds. I mean, Canada can't. There's no gavel. There's no court. There's no judge that is going to have any influence on how the blockchains work. Like, you can't convince. I mean, all the people who are mining are like all about self-sovereign money and sound money supply. So why would they ever give one damn about what happens in the US or some court in Cambodia or Japan? Like, how do you, like, this stuff is so multi-jurisdictional. It's like, what are you going to get, like, a bunch of Russian miners to agree with some, you know, Southern District of New York court decision? That's so far outside of like what these guys care about or what the crypto universe does. So this is fun though, man. This is like, this is where this technology is finally starting to put pressure on these centralized, you know, governments that are all about control. So if you have any amount of libertarian, you know, in you, this stuff should be pretty obvious.
Cody, thank you so much, man.
Yeah.
One quick question along the same lines of what you're talking about. When I saw your first post on Facebook, I was just wondering what the impetus was for it. Was it just for the recommendation to self-custody? Was it based on any recent geopolitical events or anything of that nature? Okay.
It's a lot of it. I mean, like, there's a lot of the stuff, like, you know, if the current administration and NATO end up putting, like, this is a long time coming. I mean, this is like, there's not like any single one issue. I mean, the trucker thing, I think, probably put this on a lot of people's radar where it's like, I mean, there's this idea of like right to commerce and right to protest and right to free speech, and like crypto kind of fits into all three of those. And so the trucker thing is what really called it to mind. And I thought that was on a lot of people's minds, which is why I posted that. But also, if you look at any kind of sanctions going against Russia or China, and they need to have some rails to actually conduct commerce. You know, what if Russia goes to a Bitcoin-based system where they start, yeah, we're doing commerce with China, you know, using Bitcoin, and right, the hell with the U.S. And Europe, you know, the SWIFT banking system, which is what's used now. So, like, a lot of those kind of, and let's say China and Russia decide to do that, and then all of a sudden the U.S. says, well, we're just going to ban Bitcoin, and they say, yeah, if you use Bitcoin, you're supporting terrorism or, you know, disorder or whatever you want to call it, and now you're the bad guy. And it's like, I don't want to give those creeps the ability to do that. I mean, it's pretty obvious on that. But no, Rob, there wasn't like any one particular like oh shit, I a buddy of mine told me something that's going on. It's kind of the pressure's mounting. I think we're all watching the world crumble, and you know, it's good to get out of Dodge quickly if you need to.
Understood. And KuCoin in particular with China, there's been obvious separation there. Do you think there's any potential specific risks there, or?
I believe KuCoin is based out of Singapore. I believe they're not Chinese. I thought they were out of Korea. I think they have Korean ownership, but I think they're actually based in Singapore. Singapore is a great check. Double check on that. I don't hold stuff on these exchanges. I move. What I'll do is I'll take my self custody crypto, whatever I'm trading with, and I'll move that onto the centralized exchange or sometimes a decentralized exchange. I'll make my swap, trade my Bitcoin for Ethereum or Ethereum for Bitcoin or whatever trading pair that I'm doing, and then I will take the new assets and take them off of KuCoin. So I just get on there for a couple of hours and then I'm off, and that way it's kind of hot potato. Like, yeah, there's a risk in those 2 hours that they could do something, but yeah, that's what I look at.
Understood. Yeah, I transposed a couple of articles. It looks like the Hong Kong office is empty.
Yeah.
So there you go. Thank you very much. Again, as always, Cody, very authoritative information. I sincerely appreciate all your recommendations and all your input.
Hey, once again, I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank Cody for taking the time to share what he's learned about the cryptocurrency world. Great friend, and always has information you can count on. Until next time, I'm Chris Daly, reminding you to keep it real.